For who?
For me.
For who?
Natalie Hogg and Congress from Grand.
I would definitely will do that. This is me, Treadwell, and could people, if you're online, could you tell me your name, please?
Lieutenant Governor, this is Denny DeWitt.
Hi, Denny.
Howdy.
This is Joe Dunham with the Department of Labor, Wage and Hour.
Hi, Joe.
And Dan Robinson, Department of Labor, Research and Analysis.
And Dallas Hargrave, Commissioner's Office, Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Thank you.
Hi, Lieutenant Governor. It's also Nora Ortiz Frederick with Christians for Equality.
Tell me your name again so I can write it down. Okay, we got that. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else online? We have one person here. What I'd like to do is get started and simply say this. The law does require us to hold 8 hearings. It doesn't require the people to show up. It does require us to have a hearing if we have somebody on the pro and the con side. I'm going to make two offers. One is that we go ahead in an attenuated manner, have a hearing on the record and do that. The other is adjourn the hearing for, and Gretchen, I'm, you know, Gretchen Obar, who's here, is a member of the assembly here in the Valley. And, but I guess I say we could adjourn the hearing and hold it at a time where the pro and the con side would agree would be more helpful to the cause of it, education of the public. But, we would have to complete that by next Tuesday to fit the statutory requirements. Next Saturday?
The fourth.
So my suggestion is that we go ahead, that we get the hearing on the record, that we ask a few questions, that we have it on the record, and that we complete the hearing on schedule. Is that acceptable to the pro and the con side?
That's fine with me.
Okay. And I'll move quickly and say that this is a public hearing on ballot measure 3, an act to increase the Alaska minimum wage. These hearings are held in compliance with Alaska law, which was passed in 2010 that requires us to hold 2 hearings in each of the state's 4 judicial districts. This is a bill for an act entitled An Act Increasing the Alaska Minimum Wage to $8.75 per hour effective January 1, 2015, $9.75 per hour effective January 1, 2016, and thereafter adjusted annually for inflation. In summary, the bill would do just that. It would create a method for an annual inflation adjustment, but if that method does not yield a state minimum wage that is at least a dollar higher than the federal minimum wage, it would require the minimum wage to be at least $1 over the federal minimum. Tips or gratuities would not count toward the minimum wage. The bill is a 2-page act. And it provides a method for calculating an annual adjustment for inflation after 2016. And if the minimum wage determined by the proposed annual adjustment method is less than a dollar over the federal minimum wage, the Alaska minimum wage shall be set at $1 over the federal minimum wage. That was section 1. Section 2 is there. And I would say that there's one other issue because this has a – section 3 is the first place that we establish the cost of living increase. Section 4 is the relationship to the federal minimum wage. If this bill passes in November and we certify the election, it becomes effective 90 days after certification. So while the law calls for the minimum wage to go up January 1st, 2015, it's likely that with a certification mid-November, that won't be effective until January 1st or until sometime in the middle of February 2015. it becomes effective 90 days after certification. It's not subject to veto, may not be repealed by the legislature within 2 years of its effective date, according to the Alaska Constitution. And although the legislature may amend an initiative at any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years may not operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or vitiate the intent. And Warren v. Boucher and Warren v. Thomas were two legal cases in the 70s that helped define that issue. The cost estimate for this bill is the cost of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development for new posters and brochures, $2,083, and the cost to the Office of the Lieutenant Governor and the Division of Elections, which we totaled at about $80,000. And I'll tell you that of that $80,000, because there are three initiatives on the ballot this fall, we're not spending an extra $240,000 for these three initiatives, but had any one of the initiatives gone forward when we made this cost estimate, that's how much it would have cost. So I'll go from there. It's now time for the pro side to present their case for this, and I would invite the pro side to be mindful of the fact that what we're doing is creating a public record here. This hearing will be online and available for people to review, and it will be online and available for people to consider the intent of the bill if there's any legal activity afterwards if it does pass. And so I wanted to invite you to identify yourself again for the record and give the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. My name is Nora Ortiz Frederick, and I'm with Christians for Equality. I am a lay church planter with the United Methodist Church, and in my capacity there, I convene Christians for Equality, which is an interfaith action or a Christian action group.
And Nora, just so you and I have met a couple of times, you've got black hair and glasses, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Now I know who I'm talking to. I'm sorry, I apologize. Go ahead.
That's okay. We have the presentations up, is that correct?
Yes, we do.
Just let me know when you want me to move the slides forward, please.
Okay, great. Thank you. So ballot measure three, we're excited about because we believe it is good for workers. We also believe it's good for workers' families. It's good for the economy, and it's good for our state. And if you would advance to slide number one, that's just a recap of what the ballot measure does. The Lieutenant Governor gave us an overview to raise the minimum wage in two installments to restore the cost of living adjustment and to restore the guarantee that the Alaska minimum wage will always remain a dollar above the federal level. Our slide number three shows why we think this is important. In currently, Alaska is now 19th in the minimum wage, and we'll slide another spot if we don't raise the wage by enacting this legislation. And at one time, we were the leaders. In fact, we were a big leader. And while 19th or 20th sounds like a good place to be among our 50 states, one of the things we have to remember, which is shown in slide number four, is that Alaska has a very high cost of living, and when we put it against minimum wage and our cost of living rank, we're at number four. And so we have the 19th highest minimum wage, and yet we're the fourth most expensive state to live in, although that includes D.C. as well, too. You'll also notice that in these top 10 most expensive places to live in, that only one of those has a lower minimum wage than Alaska. If you'll move on to slide number five. We often hear people saying that raising the wage will kill jobs, but when we look at some of the research of what happened the last time Alaska raised their minimum wage in 2002-2003, in fact, we see that there was job and wage growth during that time. In one time, we had a 27% increase in the minimum wage that went from $5.65 an hour to $7.15 an hour, and at that time was $2 above the minimum wage. And what we didn't see a decline in jobs in Alaska. In fact, we saw both growth in job and wages. If we go to slide number 6, we can look at who's affected by the minimum wage and an increase in the minimum wage. Currently, there are approximately 28,000 Alaskans that are working directly, that are working for minimum wage or under $9.75, and there's another 20,000 directly that will be effective that are making that $9.75 to $10.75 range. So total of the wage earners, 48,000 Alaskans, but that doesn't include the families and the children that are dependent on their wage earners. We often hear that the wage earners are teenagers that are having after-school jobs that make minimum wage. But you'll see that, in fact, 78% of the people earning this minimum and low wage are age 20 and over. Majority of them are women, and 25% of them have children in their household. And so we think this is important because, first of all, income inequality is already a women's issue, and so it's going to disproportionately affect women and also children in a woman's household. But even with two-parent families, if you have more than one child, child care often outstrips minimum wage earnings. That is, that if you have two children and you need to go to a minimum wage job, often it's more expensive for child care for those two children than what you actually earn in a minimum wage job. There's no way to get ahead. So raising the wage also stimulates the economy because people earning low income spend every single dime they make. There's no investment. There's just getting by. Minimum wage earners pour their wages back into the community. They buy gas, they buy groceries, they buy clothes and pay their rent. So if we could advance to slide number 6. Earlier, we looked at the historical data of when Alaska last raised their minimum wage 12 years ago, but let's look at some recent job data from other states that raised their wage. This slide is probably difficult to see, but within the last year, 13 states have raised their minimum wage, and of those 13 states, 12 have seen job growth. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 8. Keeping the minimum wage low affects everyone, especially taxpayers. It shifts the effect of poverty-level wages from corporate earnings to to tax-funded public assistance. And we'll see here, as an example, is Walmart employees last year accessed $6.2 billion in public assistance in Medicaid, in CHIP, the insurance program, earned income tax credit, and food stamps from, and that was just from Walmart alone. But when we look at also then the fast food workers, they accessed about $6.85 billion in public assistance. And also we see that families and people in the frontline fast food workers disproportionately access public assistance benefits. So it really working at these wages that keep you in poverty means that you have to access public assistance just to get by. And that means that we end up subsidizing the employer's ability to pay low wages. In the next slide, slide number 10, is on the Earned Income Tax Credit. It's a great program, but again, it's no substitute for a fair wage. And the calculations on here talks a little bit about what happens when we allow corporations to pay sub-poverty level wages. It just ends up costing us more, costing taxpayers more in public assistance programs. And if you'll move to the last slide, number 10. So what does this ballot measure really mean? So right now, a single parent with two children has to work 61 hours a week in order to stay above the federal poverty line. By raising the minimum wage, what that's going to do is give that parent 12 hours more a week to spend time with their kids, to take classes, to look for better employment opportunities, and just to be able to stay above the federal poverty line. hardworking Alaskans should be able to provide for themselves and their families with dignity. There's no way to get ahead if you're working for wages that keep you in the daily grind and cycle of poverty. You don't have the time or the extra cash for job training, for schooling, or for even giving up that second or third job. It's all you can do to just get by. When hardworking Alaskans are providing for themselves, they're moving out of poverty and they're raising healthy families, and that's good for our communities here in Alaska. It's time to put the people of Alaska above corporate profits. Alaska needs a raise. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Nora. Denny, would you like to present the con side? We have, I don't believe we have a slideshow for you, but the floor is yours.
No, thank you, Mr. Lieutenant Governor. We're small time. We're not the big corporations. We're the mom and pop group. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for the opportunity to offer our testimony in opposition to Proposition 3 on the November ballot. My name is Denny DeWitt, and I'm the State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business here in Alaska. We represent about 2,000 small businesses in Alaska, and we oppose Proposition 3 as it is not in the best interest of those it's intended to affect. Make no mistake, should Proposition 3 pass, it would have two immediate effects, but not the ones supporters would have you believe. First, teenage unemployment will increase over time, reducing their chances of getting valuable work experience. Prop 3 supporters point to the Washington State as an example Alaskans should follow. In 2013, both states had similar unemployment rates, 6.5% in Alaska and 7% in Washington. But for young adults ages 16 to 19, the situation was much different. In Alaska, where the minimum wage is $7.75, teen unemployment was 17.5%. In Washington state, where the minimum wage was $9.32 an hour and rises every year because of indexing to inflation, the teen unemployment rate was an astounding 30.6%. In Oregon, the minimum wage is $9.10, and the teen unemployment rate is 27.4%. A loss of opportunity at the bottom rings of the career ladder is concerning not just because teens miss out on spending cash, but also teens who miss out on early career experience are at a distinct disadvantage. For instance, research has found that seniors in high school with part-time jobs are earning higher wages 6 to 9 years after graduation than their counterparts who didn't work. Lengthy spells of unemployment have also been shown to increase the risk of future unemployment for young people. In this regard, the last thing Alaska should be trying to do is emulate the youth unemployment rates in Oregon and Washington states. Understanding how small businesses work is an important issue. Not only is the amount that is the minimum wage amount an issue, but as the minimum wage is driven up, it's a hidden tax of about $5,000 on each employer employing someone at the minimum wage. That means that there is less funding available for small businesses to hire people. So the entry-level jobs go away. Other folks may be making more, and the folks that are making more are happy, but the folks without jobs are very unhappy. Second, the ability of low-skilled workers to earn income, especially those assisting seniors with errands and chores around the house, would be drastically cut, harming two groups at once. Elderly Alaskans on fixed incomes will be forced to reduce the amount of goods and services they can afford. This will be particularly devastating to those who are hiring casual helpers to assist with household chores they are no longer able to do for themselves. Data shows that the families earning at least three times the poverty level are more likely to benefit than those earning below it, making the minimum wage increase a lousy anti-poverty initiative. These results are not a matter of speculation, but economic patterns that have followed every increase in the minimum wage. It's vital that voters know the truth about the minimum wage. 99% of all hourly workers in Alaska, that's all but about 3,000 full-time equivalent jobs, earn above the minimum wage. More than 50% of the minimum wage workers are under age 24. So raising the rate removes the first run up the economic ladder of life for young adults, as business owners are forced to cut back on their hiring in order to meet cost increases. After the last federal increase in the minimum wage, 500,000 teenage jobs disappeared the following 6 months. And that was in a period of economic recovery when more jobs should have been available. The average annual family income of those earning minimum wage nationally in 2009 was over $48,000. Significantly more people earning at least three times the poverty level will benefit as those living beneath it. 83% of the minimum wage earners are teenagers living with working parents, adults living alone, or dual income couples. What happens when the minimum wage rises too high? Remember filling station attendants? How about baggers in grocery stores? Or for older people, ushers, older people like me, ushers in movie theaters. All have been eliminated. Technology may do the same for today's minimum wage jobs. Placing orders through touch screens and self-checkout is growing in Alaska. Losing these jobs means losing the bottom rung on a career ladder and fewer opportunities for the people who used to fill those jobs. Of course, other factors besides the minimum wage can determine teen unemployment rate. But a careful look at the data shows that a higher minimum wage has played a role. Using data from 2005 to 2011, economists from Miami and Trinity University estimated that over 4,300 fewer teens had jobs in Washington State due to the higher minimum wage. One article in the Seattle Weekly provided a striking example of how these jobs are eliminated. Restaurants in the state's largest cities have generally stopped hiring folks to bus tables, opting to have the servers bus their own tables instead, and are scheduling fewer hours per shift due to the higher cost. These are also results that were seen in a recent study done by Duke University. These consequences are broadly consistent with what we see in economic research on minimum wage increases. Since the early 1990s, roughly 85% of the most credible academic studies on this subject show that a higher minimum wage reduces employment for the least skilled and least experienced employees. That doesn't mean there aren't outliers, but they're in a distinct minority. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office understood this, and that's why it estimated 500,000 lost jobs nationwide from the proposed $10.10 federal minimum wage hike. An unfortunate reality we must recognize is that small employers, those most affected by the minimum wage, cannot support employees that are not bringing to the business a value equal to their compensation. We are providing unemployment insurance, workers' compensation insurance, Social Security employer tax at a minimum, in addition to the basic salary. In addition, over half these employers are providing additional benefits such as health insurance. As these total employee costs increase, businesses must look to mechanization and computerization in order to stay in business. They also have to look at whether or not they can continue additional benefits such as health insurance, and whether or not they have to end employment for all employees at any compensation level, being driven out of business, like my friend who owns Seafair Inn, where I work as a young person, just closed his door and we lost 44 jobs. Given the reality of whom the proposed increase in the minimum wage will hurt, the young starting their lives and the seniors in the sunset of their lives, we can only hope and recommend that Alaskans vote no on this perhaps well-meaning proposal. It's not the intention we'll be voting on. It's the actual effect on the young and old. an economist, William J. Dennis, who's been studying small business and the minimum wage for nearly 40 years, asks, and I quote, "Employers want experienced workers. How do you get experience when you price people out of the market in the first place?" Close quotes. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for the opportunity to share our position.
Thank you, Denny. Let me just say again for the record, we've got several experts on from the Department of Labor. We have Joe Dunham, Dan Robinson, and Dallas Hargraves from the Commissioner's Office. I'm going to ask, first off, is we have one person present here. Gretchen, are you interested in asking any questions of the pro side or the con side? Okay.
I am on the con side.
Okay. You're welcome to stand up and state that.
Gretchen Omar from Wausau. I had kids that worked in fast food many years ago, and I had a couple of them that kept being asked over and over again to work the same shift early in the morning when they could not get dependable workers to come in. And they would get so discouraged because they only could get minimum wage. And there were other workers who were real flaky, and I don't know how you describe them, but they didn't care, and they got paid the same amount. It was very discouraging to my children. And my husband always joked with them and said, well, they can pay you $15 an hour, but they can only pay the other people, too. And, you know, kind of like a lack of motivation, and I hated to see that in my kids, some of their first jobs where they felt discouraged by the amount of their hard work did not matter. Everyone got paid the same, no matter what you did. I kind of feel like sometimes it's like cutting off one end of the blanket, throwing it on the other side, and hoping your blanket will be longer. I have seen studies, and of course you get studies on either side, but I've seen studies that show that when you raise minimum wage,
thank you. Would either the pro side or the con side like to respond? This was more testimony than questions, but I'm offering you that opportunity. Hearing none. The other offer I wanted to make was, is there anything the pro side and the con side would like to ask of the Department of Labor, either on the mechanics of the way this bill would be carried out, or any of its effects that the department might be able to comment upon? Hearing none, I'm going to ask, Denny, one of the statistics which you used in your presentation was that 80% of minimum wage earners are teenagers, and I couldn't write fast enough to get the others. Teenagers are part-time workers who are supplementing income at home. Was that the statistic you used?
83% of minimum wage earners are teenagers living with working parents, adults living alone, or dual income couples.
Okay, and is that a state statistic or a national statistic?
That's a national statistic.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted that clarified for the record. Is
sure.
there anything else to come before this hearing? I would like to call this hearing adjourned. I would like.
Before you do that, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, let me thank you for what you've done on this. Kevin Turkington will be making our presentation at the next two meetings, but I wanted to publicly extend the appreciation of the National Federation of Independent Business and our 2,000 members. This is a long and sometimes tedious process, but we do appreciate the fact that you have done it in a very fair and meaningful manner, and we want to thank you for that.
Thank you for that. Nora, thank you for joining us, too, and our next hearing on this matter will be Monday, September 29th from 3 to 5 p.m. in Bethel at the Legislative Information Office. Once again, people can call in at 855-463-5009, and we will have our final hearing on Wednesday, October 1st in Fairbanks. I'd say to both the pro and the con side, I know this is an issue that gets a lot less visibility than marijuana and Bristol Bay Pebble Mine. But to the extent that you encourage people to get out to your talk, reaching in your campaign to be here, it makes it better for, you know, makes it worthwhile. And thank you all for your participation, and we'll see or hear from you on Monday.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.